Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 25th. I'm Alan Chartok. The communications staff of the Trump White House underwent a shakeup last week as Press Secretary Sean Spicer announced his resignation and Anthony Scaramucci was appointed White House Director of Communications. This is the latest episode in the saga of the Trump administration versus the press. Morgan Hook, a former spokesman for New York Governors David Paterson and Elliot Spitzer, is in the studio for the discussion. We want to hear from you. What are your thoughts about the move? What do you think about the way Trump administration has dealt with the press so far? The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can send us an email at WAMC. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. After a rocky seven-month tenure, Sean Spicer announced his resignation as White House press secretary last week. Sarah Huckabee Sanders will take over, and Anthony Scaramucci has been brought in as a White House director of communications. Politico is reporting that Scaramucci plans to fire Assistant Press Secretary Michael Short. He has also vowed to fire everybody to stop any leaks from the White House aides. This is the latest chapter in what has been a testy relationship between the Trump administration and the media. Here for the discussion is my friend and a longtime guy around town here, Morgan Hook. He's a former television journalist who served as communications director for New York Governors David Paterson and Elliot Spitzer. Hook also oversaw communications for SUNY schools. Morgan, welcome back to the Vox Pop.
Thank you, Alan, for having me.
So what do you make of all this recent changes? I mean, it is so easy to sort of caricature the way that Trump is behaving towards the press.
It is. And I think if we've had astute observers of the way that especially Republican presidents and Republican politicians deal with the press, it's sort of a long time coming. I remember when John McCain picked Sarah Palin. And you'll recall there was a stretch there for about a month, month and a half, where Sarah Palin was doing no interviews, just stopped. And I remember thinking at the time, she's not going to do another interview the rest of this campaign. And it was a moment where I think that the conservative national elected officials realized we don't need to talk to the New York Times. We don't need to do Katie Couric. We don't need to talk to the – we can just go on Fox News. We can just go on conservative radio and send our spokespeople out and send surrogates out to talk to mainstream press. And if you look, to me, I'm sure it was starting before then, but to me, it started with Sarah Palin. And during that campaign, they just took her off. They refused. They just stopped holding press conferences, stopped taking questions from her traveling press corps. And if you look, we now get to where we are today, which is ending the on-camera briefings. Trump hasn't done a press conference in God knows how long. He refuses to take questions until he's taking them off the record on the plane, and then the next day demands that the off-the-record session be on the record in a bizarre little moment we had last week.
But he called the press the enemy of the people.
Oh, well, but that's been going on since Ronald Reagan or before.
But the enemy of the people, Ibsen, really? 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You know, Morgan, it appears to me that if you were going to try to pull some kind of a pooch in the United States, one of the things you would try to do is get rid of the press. One of the things you would do is declare that the press were the enemy of the people and that, it was phony news. One of the things you would do is to say these are going to be rigged elections. And I am sure if he's where he is in the polls right now at the next election, 2020, he'll be saying this is going to be a rigged election also.
That's what he was saying when he thought he was going to lose.
That's what I'm saying. So this is very scary.
It is. I think it is speaks to, again, sorry to paint a broad brush here, but I think it speaks to efforts that have been going on for a long time. And this is just where he's more brazen about it than previous Republican elected officials or candidates. He sort of openly says the press is the enemy. But I mean, really, how long have we heard especially Republican media figures, saying, oh, the mainstream press, liberal bias. By the way, liberal bias is complete nonsense and doesn't hold up if you give it even the slightest bit of scrutiny. The idea that the mainstream press is a liberally biased thing, organization, and somehow speaks in a unified voice is complete nonsense, in my opinion.
Now, where are you working now?
I work for SKD Knickerbocker, which is a PR firm that operates here in Albany and in New York City and D.C. and Los Angeles. And we work on a lot of we work on some progressive issues and some work with some progressive candidates and Democrats mostly. But we also work on a lot of other things as well.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Ladies and gentlemen, it's your program. I want you to check in. I want you to tell us what you think about the press, about Trump's war on the press. It's a very important program. We have our friend Morgan Hook here to talk to you. And it is crucial to me that if you're going to have an American democracy, you have to have people knowing what they're voting on, what they're dealing with. And the only way you're going to do that is if they can read it or hear it for themselves. Do we know here personally at WAMC that this is dangerous? Well, yeah. And it's not only from the Trumpians, but also, you know, there are calls made to people I know quite well who feature my column and the rest of it. Get them off from the Cuomo people. So, you know, it is what Andrew Cuomo would say. It is what it is. And, politicians don't like to be called for what they're doing. There was an astounding article on today's Empire page that was carried from Jim Mahoney, which a great piece of journalism in which all of the major investors in Cuomo, who's got $25 million in his campaign account already, and what they got for it. I mean, it was terrific. You know, this one was appointed to this commission. This one did this. This one got a contract. It's astounding. You can't have, if you don't have that kind of thing out there, I don't know what there is. And how do we get people to pay attention?
I think people are paying more attention now. But I'll also say, though, to your point, in some ways, what the Trump administration is doing right now is no different from what people on both sides of the aisle. You mentioned in the intro, I worked for a few governors, and we definitely felt it. We definitely felt that there were times when the sort of collective media in Albany wasn't focusing on the important issues, and they would get distracted by things. And so I think that that's a natural reaction for folks who are in elected office and folks who are especially an executive where the attention is always focused on you. I mean, like a governor or a president. I think that that's a natural reaction. I think the biggest difference, what we're seeing, the violation of norms that we're seeing with Trump, is that they go the extra step and say, enemy of the people, you know, the fake news, sort of undermining the credibility of the entire institution in a way that we have not seen before, and certainly not in the brazen public way that we see. I mean, the Trump surrogates are constantly going on the air and saying all of it is fake. The only place you can trust is Fox and Friends, which is preposterous, of course. But that's the biggest difference. And there's always going to be some tension there between a press corps and a press shop and an executive. But I think that's natural. We see it with Bill de Blasio in New York City as well right now. And you mentioned Andrew Cuomo. Those are both Democrats. That's going to happen. It's what the Trump administration does is they take it just to a step that we've never seen before. And what concerns me is that now that we've gone that far out in presidential politics, that's going to be the new norm.
1-800-348-2551. Colleen, I think we're having a little trouble. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be back to talk to a whole bunch of people who are patiently waiting on the phones.
Support for WAMC comes from Hawkins House, Bennington, Vermont, a crafts market featuring Ed Levin and other handcrafted jewelry, pottery, blown glass, woodenware, clothing, handbags, accessories, Vermont products, and more. HawkinsHouse.net. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, working to connect food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares now available for the 2017 season. FarmProject.org. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. The-gazebo.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. And Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery.
And we are back with Morgan Hook and Joan from Ticonderoga. What say you? Hi, Joan.
Yeah, I was working in Albany during both terms of old Cuomo's administration. I could tell you that was the friendliest, most open, most... He was open to the press. He was open to the public. He was a very, very accessible, really, really good administration. It made a complete turnaround when Pataki came in. It almost became like a police state. And it was not accessible to anybody that he had, you know, they even brought in prison guards to guard his office. There wasn't enough police down there to guard him.
I remember.
And the whole mentality started right there on the state level in New York State. And then it went on to the Republican mentality nationwide. Well, and the present Cuomo is very, very different than his father. And he's been pretty overly brusque, and I don't think he's been that open either.
No, you're right. Hey, Joan, I remember, of course, all of this very well because, you know, I had a program with Mario for a lot of years. And he was a guy who truly believed in democracy, truly believed in the function of the press, to the point where if you were a reporter in Albany during that time, you got a call from him in the middle of the night to talk about an article that he had written that day or that the reporter had written. I remember one night where he called me up and he started to yell at me. You must have talked for half an hour. Really, let me have it. And I said, Governor, can I say something? He said, no, you said too much. And he hung up.
Well,
but he really believed, you're right, he really believed in the function of the press.
Well, he was running out of steam when he tried to run for the third time, and they were after him and really, hammered him down. And so he lost. But then...
he lost for the fourth time. He got elected the third time.
All right. Well, I was there during all his entire administration. I was in a position where I had to interact with the staff, and I just thought he was a great guy.
Yeah,
now, the other thing is that I have many friends live out west in the Cow States. I used to live out west. And there was a concerted effort to start hammering away at Hillary Clinton at least 2 years before the election because they knew that she was going to be the candidate. And she was portrayed as this most awful woman. And I even have relatives up here in the Canadian border, small businessmen, that they voted against her, not for Trump, but against her.
Okay, hold on a second, Joan. Hold on a second. Let's get the guest in here. Morgan, what do you make of this, of all of this?
I think she's exactly right. I mean, we knew well ahead of time that it looked like Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee.
Yeah.
It's funny to go back and look at the quotes that you hear from especially Republican officials once Barack Obama won the nomination back in 2008. And these folks who, when she was appointed Secretary of State, I mean, even Rush Limbaugh, I think, had nice things to say about Hillary Clinton at that point because they could use it as a way to attack Barack Obama. So they kept that up until they realized that Obama was after he won a second term. And as soon as it was interesting because when Obama was running for re-election, they used Benghazi to attack him constantly. And it sort of felt like, well, this debate has been settled because this election took place and he won. And immediately the sort of right wing media machine turned that accusation on Hillary, and didn't that drive the entire email situation, because there was going to be some smoking gun about how she, you know, fixed Benghazi or some nonsense like that, which we now, of course, know is complete nonsense. But the caller's absolutely right. The effort in one way to stop Hillary Clinton started 2 years before the election, and in another way, it started 30 years ago.
Is there a way of playing the press? Is that the idea?
Well, I think there's no question that it's playing the press. And I do think that
Is the press that manipulable?
I think that the press can be manipulated. I think that the press, I mentioned earlier, I don't believe that there is such a thing in the sort of mainstream press as a liberal bias. I do think that there is a bias towards controversy, scandal, and towards, frankly, the easy story or the easy headline. Yeah. And that can be applied to Democrats or Republicans.
I think you're exactly right. Joan, thank you.
Joan,
there are a lot of people behind you, so it's got to be quick. Go ahead.
Okay, I saw her getting hammered away, the most disgraceful insults and defamation all through the primary and then at the beginning of her run with Trump. And the weaselly Republican Democratic males did not step up to defend her until the very last minute. They were absolute cowards.
Okay, thank you.
That was horrible.
Thank you for that. Anything on that, Morgan?
I think that... elected officials, and I've said this to a few elected officials, I think that their number one concern is getting reelected. So
it sure is, as we see in the United States Senate today.
But I will say at one point where the caller's wrong, I think that the Democratic establishment very much came out in favor of Hillary. You did not see, I mean, we had Republicans in New York State who wouldn't even say Donald Trump's name. They would be out on the campaign trail. I'm thinking some members of Congress now who would go out and say, well, I support the candidate. Mm-hmm. Oh, who's the candidate? Well, I support the Republican nominee.
You're talking about John Faso.
I'm talking about Elise Stefanik, too.
Elise Stefanik.
And
you represent, just for the sake of it.
Yes, for full disclosure, I am working with the candidate who is running against Elise Stefanik.
Okay, very good. Let's go to Brian in Tivoli. Okay, Brian in Tivoli, you're on.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, excluding WAMC, I think... CNN and many in the other in the mainstream media are to blame, really, for Donald Trump's rise. It seemed to be 24/7 coverage of every one of his press conferences or his rallies. And now he's battling those same people that gave him all of that free press. But I do have a question for you. Obviously, the president is losing his battle with the media. Is there a president that you think President Trump could look at and mirror on how to maybe gain the media back, or is there a president that he might be able to imitate and try to change this image that he has?
Put another way, Morgan Hooker, could he turn it around with the press?
The short answer is no, I don't think he can, because I don't think he's capable of change. I think this is the story. I was thinking about this before we did the show, and I was sure that we were going to get this question. What can he do to change? And there's been this myth of Donald Trump, I think, over the last 2 years, as he's become a politician, that somehow he's going to wake up one morning and decide to be presidential and put down Twitter and sort of grow up. And I think we've got to move past that. That's a very popular media narrative. It's the constant who's going to write that story that this is the turnaround. Oh, no, wait, this is the turnaround. And then he goes in front of the Boy Scouts and gives a political speech like he did last night. I mean, the man is who he is. But to answer the caller's question, who can he emulate? I mean, I think Ronald Reagan was someone who, speaking of Republicans, I think Ronald Reagan was someone who could come across as just a regular guy and could be relatable on a sort of a regular person level. And that is what the appeal of Trump was, right? That he was just a sort of regular guy, even though he was also a billionaire at the same time.
Yeah, but Morgan, it was also his relationship with the press, Reagan's relationship. They had to like him. On some level, they had to like him.
I think that the press is ready to like Trump too. I think that they want to like him. I mean, we know that the New York City media likes him. We know that the New York City tabloid media loves Donald Trump.
Wait! Not the Daily News. They hate him.
They hate President Trump, but they loved Donald Trump.
Well, but they hate this guy now, and the New York Times. Don't even start me on that one.
But what I'm saying
is appropriate.
If he goes back, well, I think that maybe their editorial board might hate him, but I still stand by the fact that I think that the reporters themselves are going to cover Donald Trump the way he deserves to be covered,
yeah.
Which is when the administration, which I believe to be an unmitigated disaster so far, is going to get covered like it's an unmitigated disaster. And now, that's the way it should get covered.
Now, you know, Brian brings up an interesting point. You, of course, were press secretary or communications director for both Spitzer and Patterson. Now, Patterson did one of the most interesting things I've ever seen. He gets to be governor. He accedes to the governorship, and he calls all the reporters in, and he looks at them and says, okay, now you know, because he knows what the gotcha stuff is going to come next. You know that I have been, my marriage has had rough spots, and I've been with other women and, you know, other things, and I've tried some mood enhancers or whatever you want to call them, and it didn't work.
No, it did work. I disagree with you there, because that was
did
on...
Did you tell him to do that?
I did not. I was not his press secretary or his communications director at the time, but his communications director at the time was Risa Heller, who is a well-regarded Democratic operative, used to work for Chuck Schumer, and I have a lot of respect for her. I think she was right. Because it got in front of it. And it's sort of communications 101. If you've got a potentially bad story out there and you know it's going to come out, get in front of it.
But it didn't get him elected another time.
It didn't get him elected another time. But his poll numbers were really high for a good 9 months when he took office. And when we started to see his poll numbers go down, it was a combination of three things. Charles O'Byrne resigned, and he was a steadying force inside the administration. The reality of the budget situation in New York started to become very apparent. And here I don't know who had advised him to do this, but in retrospect, it was a mistake. David Patterson went around the state and held public town hall meetings and basically went out there. And any time someone said, hey, but I know the budget's really bad, but are you going to cut this really important program that's for me? And he'd kind of say, yeah, because we got to cut everything. And he was being honest and people didn't like it. Mm. And then the third thing was right about that same time, Saturday Night Live did their impression of David Patterson, and I think that was devastating.
Which was cruel, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think in retrospect, that Saturday Night Live impression of David Patterson doesn't come across quite so funny.
Brian, you're terrific. Thanks for the call. All right, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are pretty good. Let's go to John in Pine Bush. Okay, John, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to bring up to get your opinion on a article that was just published in the New Republic magazine. It's an expose of Trump's ties to the Russian mafia and money laundering for the past 30 years. It's unbelievable. I don't know if you've read the article.
I have not, but I've heard about it. So just praise.
Oh, my God. Just you have to read it.
Well, wait. Instead of remonstrating us, why don't you tell us, give us the main talking points.
There's dozens of examples of his ties to it. One is the largest fine ever levied on any casino was against the Taj Mahal. $15 million fine for money laundering with the Russians. That was in 87. The most recent one was his ties to the Trump Soho Hotel in New York City, at which he put no money in. He gets 18% royalties just for them using his name. And the people who built the hotel are deeply involved in the Russian mafia. That's as of 2 years ago.
Okay, so John, because this is a media sort of related program, you raise the New Republic. Is what you're saying that's the kind of journalism we need more of?
It's his all the effort that he spends trying to get the heat away from the investigation into Russia and its business, it's going to blow up in his face. It's inevitable, and everyone knows it. anybody in intelligence knows it.
Let's go.
What are we going to do past this?
Okay.
What's going to happen after it hits? fan.
Okay, let's go to Morgan. Okay, let's go to Morgan Hook.
So I'll have a response to this that may surprise you. I find that I found that from my time in government, working for a couple different governors, there was constantly this sort of, especially after Eliot Spitzer had to resign, it felt like the press corps was sort of constantly looking for that next big scandal. And every little thing that came up, it felt like to us, and this goes to what I was saying before about that tension that's going to constantly exist, especially between a press shop and the press corps that covers them. It felt to us that every single little thing was, they were trying to turn it into a scandal. They were trying to turn it into some sort of conspiracy. I even had one moment as a sort of junior press officer where I directed the press to go down the hall here because I was told to. And then I said, oh, no, wait, we screwed up. Actually, the meeting's going to be back here on this side. And in the interim, like, Shelley Silver had escaped out the back door. And all of the press corps, the Albany press corps, looked at me and said, you did that on purpose to let him get out. And I said, no, we did it on purpose because we were idiots and we didn't know what we were doing. Sometimes it's not the conspiracy. As a matter of fact, usually it's not the conspiracy. People are not that smart.
Nevertheless, I think that John's point is well taken, that when the press does its job, a la the New Republic article he's talking about right now, or it will limit the damage that this particular man does.
I think that in the case of Donald Trump and Russia, it is not just one article. I'm agreeing with you. It is not just one article. It is article after article after, oh, whoops, I didn't put that on my disclosure, after something else, some new revelation. It's constant. It is, we just continuously see, and I guarantee that not all of it is going to be as reported, because reporters don't, you know, they report what they have. They don't have all of the information, they report what they have. And I'm sure plenty of the things that might look bad are perfectly fine.
John, you wanted to come back?
It's just that real estate is the perfect vehicle for money laundering.
Yeah.
And it's done by overpricing the sale of properties, and this article just points to hundreds and hundreds of cases that are under investigation right now just for that purpose, that it's selling properties for overprices specifically to Russian people. Not all of them have ties to organized crime.
John, we get it. Thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it very much. And we're trying to get everybody in here. And now we're going to go to Michael in Red Hook. Okay, Michael in Red Hook, you're on.
Hello, Alan. My objection with this whole Donald Trump and not being transparent or giving press conferences is the fact that nobody gives grief to Governor Cuomo, who's been in office a lot longer, and who's just never around. And when we have anything really bad go on, he loves to get out there and be seen, but he never answers for all the problems that we're facing. And the thing with that is everybody keeps on hammering Trump and everybody having hurt feelings about the way he's treating the press and everything else. We have real problems that are not being addressed. And this is just, it's just again and again, Trump and Russia. And I think what's happening is a lot of people are tuning out because we're tired of it. We have problems. This farm bill that Cuomo passed, that's going to have huge ramifications for my community. And things like that we see devastating, and yet all we hear is Russia, which we don't care. I don't think anybody I talk to, nobody
no,
cares
I think
about
a lot
that.
Of people. I think a lot of people care about it. I would disagree with you about that. But Morgan, you have something to say here?
So I have a question for the caller. Do you know the last time that Andrew Cuomo took questions from the press?
You know what? I have not heard him in any detail, blank, probably since I've heard him ask. Most of what I've heard him answer is when they're talking about natural disasters, and it's only equivalent to that little bit amount. I've never heard him answer questions about legislation that are passed or just be available. I mean, even a spokesperson.
So I'll respond to that. I'm pretty sure he held a press conference yesterday, and it was in the city. And so some of what you're complaining about, I'm not saying it's not legitimate, but some of what you're complaining about is what reporters are asking him. You know, it's this fun thing that sometimes happens with elected officials where reporters ask the questions and you are supposed to respond to them. And then if reporter asks a question, say, you think we're talking about Russia too much. You think reporters are talking about Russia too much. If a reporter is asking Andrew Cuomo about Russia and he starts saying, I'm not going to take questions on this anymore, then he will, in some corners of the press, get criticized. Why won't he answer these questions? But if he continues to answer the questions, then he'll get criticized in other corners of the press. Why is he always talking about Russia? I've seen that happen plenty of times.
And not only that, Morgan, it's the bosses who are sitting back there and saying they know what their viewers or their readers want. Michael brings up some very good points here, but they're not really interested in the obscure as much as landing against the competition.
Yeah, and I think that is a big – I think that is a – that's a legitimate criticism of the media at large, is that – the media are going to be driven a lot by what viewers and readers want to read. There is good journalism that happens every day. I'm not saying it doesn't. But, you know, especially TV, especially your 24-hour cable networks, they're going to be driven by what people are going to tune in and listen and watch.
Either that or they're going to have a fired news director. No, no, Michael. Otherwise, they're going to find somebody. Michael, I wish we could spend more time with you. We just can't. 1-800-348-2551. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people on the phone. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people, nature.org/Adirondacks. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Mingling the Waters, 200 Years on the Erie Canal, Paintings and More, celebrating the bicentennial of the Erie Canal, through September 3rd, arkellmuseum.org. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. And Lakeview Orchard and Farm Stand, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. You pick cherries, raspberries, currants, blueberries, homemade donuts, pies, pastries, kapusta, galumpki, and pierogi, lakevieworchard.com.
We are back with the great Morgan Hook. We're now going to go to Cynthia in Plattekill. All right, Cynthia, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick question. I'm just wondering what the two of you think, let me rephrase that, how much is all of this being run by Bannerman?
Banner, you mean?
Yes.
Steve Bannon?
Yeah, Bannon, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what do you think?
I feel like I haven't heard his name.
Well,
that's
the whole thing with him. He likes to sit in that office at the president's elbow, and he is the senior man setting up the message, and it's quite awful. I think, Cynthia, the import of your question is he in charge? And I think he is.
Yeah, I'm afraid he is, and it's very scary.
Yeah. Okay, Cynthia, thanks for the call. We'll go to John in Gardner, New York. All right, John in Gardner, you're on. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We've heard a lot of talk about vetting of immigrants and vetting of political appointees, but we've heard nothing about vetting presidential candidates. For instance, you know, psychological makeup, ties to governments or individuals from countries considered hostile. So, for instance, if you look at Donald Trump and you look at the 20-point CARE psychopathy scale, he probably, you know, if he were a junior airman, he couldn't get security clearance.
John, who would make that decision? Wait. Who would make that decision?
That's a good question. And that, I think
it's the only question
that needs to be put in place, because Trump is a sort of a
Okay, now let's play it out. You and I don't disagree about his, you know, his approach to life, whatever, his category. But let's play that out. Who would you have vet the candidates? What happens is you get a primary, they vet each other, right? And he starts talking about, you know, little whatever this guy or crazy that guy, and people are listening to it, and the American public is not really educated in politics, and they fall for it because it's interesting, as Morgan said before. But who would you assign the task of vetting to?
Well, here's where a gap in my knowledge of governmental functioning comes in. I'm not sure, for instance, who decides on security clearance. It could be as simple as that. I saw recently that when it was put up that Kushner should have his security clearance revoked, it was said that that was a recommendation was being sent to White House staffers who would decide, which
seemed crazy
to me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But, exactly, you know, my point. Exactly my point.
Yeah.
So you gotta go. You gotta go back to the drawing boards now, John, and you've got to analyze who would do what you want done, because I don't see it. Okay, thanks, John. Appreciate it. All right. And 1-800-348-2551. Peter in Albany is next. Okay, Peter, your turn.
Hey, I've got two comments. One, excuse me, probably a naive suggestion, but President Trump loves to hear whatever he says repeated. And if the mainstream media froze him out for a period of time, a week even, it would drive him crazy.
Okay, okay. Wait, stop right there.
Yeah.
Morgan, do you want to do this one or do you want me to do it?
I'm happy to do this one.
Go ahead.
So he's the president. And you can't freeze him out of the media. I do think that what you can freeze out are his surrogates, particularly the ones who just lie constantly and demand that Donald Trump himself come on your radio show or your TV show or talk to your reporters. But you can't freeze out
Kellyanne Conway being a pretty good example.
Yes, Kellyanne
of
Conway
who got freezed out.
There's no reason to have her on the air ever.
What'd you say?
I was going to use Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah, she was. They decided she was disgusting and that they didn't want to do it
but
anymore.
She's back now.
Well, she is and she isn't. So, for example, one of the most popular programs in the morning, is Morning Joe. And he won't let her on the program. Yeah.
But Chris Cuomo will put her on.
Right.
Secondly, before I know you have to move on, I'm curious why the media hasn't tried to change the narrative of fake news to, I don't know what fake news is. It's either accurate or it's inaccurate.
No. Wait. It's the president of the United States who is using that term, fake news. So it isn't a question of whether there is such a thing as not such a thing. He has popularized it. He keeps saying it. He keeps saying it to his base. So,
why can't we change that narrative to something other than fake news, which is meaningless?
Peter, you're not listening.
You're
not listening. It's his term. He uses it. He keeps repeating, it's fake news. Propaganda.
And why doesn't media try to change that narrative?
Well, you think they don't? You think the New York Times doesn't write editorial after editorial about it? You think that the Daily News...
I read them all. But nobody is challenging the notion that even the mainstream media uses fake news.
Well,
so why not change that narrative?
I don't think that the mainstream. I don't think the mainstream media needs to change it, because people who are listening and reading mainstream news outlets, CNN, the New York Times, WAMC, they know that fake news is nonsense, but it is a dog whistle to his supporters. I can guarantee you, I saw a statistic recently, a couple weeks old, so who knows what the numbers are now. It was something like 86% of self-identified Fox News watchers still support Donald Trump, and 14% of people who say they don't watch Fox News support him. So, you know, when he's going on there and saying fake news, he's talking to those people who are watching or listening to a different kind of media. He's not talking to the people who are operating in sort of mainstream, credible publications, and they don't need to refute it because the people who are reading those publications understand, I think they understand, I hope they understand, the difference between what the term was initially, which is literally things that were intentionally false, you know, presented as news, but intentionally false information, and what the Trump administration has taken the term to mean, which is anything we disagree with is fake news.
I guess I just wish that there was some way to attack that.
Okay. I think it is being attacked. Thank you. I think it is being attacked. Okay, look, we've got some extra space here if you want to get in on this. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent. Let's go to Barbara in Hopewell. Okay, Barbara, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I just want to say that I love, you know, WAMC and the mainstream media, but they do often do so much Russia talk.
Wait. Barbara, turn your radio off. Rule number one, because what happens is there's a 7-second delay, and we're hearing the radio in the background, okay?
It's your GPS.
I don't know how to...
You don't have to turn off the radio?
It's your GPS. I can hear Siri.
Oh, it's my GPS. Yeah, I'm done with GPS. What happens is that I watch, you know, MSNBC every night. It's the same thing. Every commentator has the same thing, all about Russia. And you're not really hearing about everything else that's going on. So what happens is that people get saturated with that news, and it really is frustrating after a while. And I think it's very important, but my husband's a Trumper, and he doesn't even believe that Russia's involved in any of this.
Okay, but Barbara, you've got to understand something, and that is, put yourself in the place of the news director. These are very competitive positions. The people who have to get the ratings for MSNBC or CNN or Fox. And by the way, guess what's leading now is MSNBC, all of a sudden in the lead. How come? Because they're guessing right as to what people want to hear. So you say, now they want to hear about something else. They want to hear about Russia anymore. And by the way, they talk about many other things. But you wouldn't be right about that, because obviously, if more people are listening to them or watching them, they're winning.
Let me cite an example from my world, consulting.
Of course.
One thing that we hear from candidates, we hear from the public, is I really don't like those negative commercials. And full disclosure, we've produced a few negative ads here and there.
Yeah.
But guess what? Everyone says they don't like them, but they work. Oh, they work. We know that they work. We've seen the polling on it. They definitely make a difference in races. So I think it's something similar happens with media. People say, oh, well, and I'm not questioning you, Barbara. I'm just saying you hear a criticism. Oh, I don't like it when you do that. I don't like it when you guys do only negative news. Yeah, but guess what? Negative news works. You know, the number two thing that drives local TV, weather and weather.
Right.
I mean, that's what people tune in for.
That's right.
Hey, well, I mean, I think it's a very important issue, but I know that some days, if you hear it like three days in a row, it's so consistent.
It's true.
After a while, you kind of go, okay, you know, I'm saturated now.
Okay, it's true. I turn it off all the time when it's repetitious. I want to hear something new. Hey, Barbara, got to let you go. Sorry. And now we're going to go to, Pete's been waiting for a long time. Okay, Pete, you're on. Hey, Pete.
Yes, Alan. Here's a thought that you folks perhaps won't like, but I'm an old man, and when I started listening to the news, it was the news. It wasn't driven by ratings like you just talked about,
right?
But it was the news.
Yep.
now all we get is opinions. I can make up my own opinion if you give me the news, but you don't have to feed me what you believe and then have me be able to verbatim say the exact same thing.
Okay, so, okay. Whoa. I'm the moderator. Over to you, Morgan Hook. You're the guest.
I think that there is a lot more content out there that makes itself look like news. For instance, we've got these 24-hour, 24/7
cables,
and most of their primetime lineup is opinion, and it's presented as news. You know, we see the banner on the lower, on the bottom that says breaking news. And so I think the important thing to remember, though, is that's not news. Those are opinion shows driven by a commentator, and it's true of the folks who are on MSNBC, same as it's true of the folks who are on Fox News. The news content is still the news content, and so if you want to tune into your newscasts, you know, I would highly recommend public television. I think they do an excellent job with their newscasts. I think NPR does an excellent job with their newscasts. Those are still news. Your front page of your papers is still news.
Okay, back to you, Pete. What do you say?
I say that's why I listen to you guys.
Okay.
And yet, on occasion, you still get into, well, this is our opinion of this and that, you know, and I still believe that if you give the average American the basic facts, we can make up our own mind.
More like Hundley and Brinkley and John Chancellor in the old days, right?
Yes.
Only a few of us remember that. Thank you, Pete. Okay, we'll go to, let's see here, Donna in Albany. Donna, make it quick. We're running out of time. Go ahead.
Hi. Yep. Okay, just to the caller who said that we really do need to take back the news or take back the narrative from the idea of fake news. I think that is true. You have to frame it in such a way. And one of the little one of the things I learned from a journalist at the Schenectady Gazette was to use the word or the term so-called fake news. By whom? Okay. And just that little bit contextualizes it, frames it in a way that people start to think, okay, well, let me think about this concept of fake.
Okay,
news.
Good contribution, Donna.
Donna, fake. Yeah, go ahead.
Donna, good contribution. Yes. That's it. We're trying to get everybody in. Thank you, dear. Oh, let's go to Scott in New York. Okay, Scott in New York, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi there. How's it going?
You got to make
a quick question.
You got to make it quick. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I just have a quick question. What do you think the chances of a Mueller firing is, and what would the outcomes be?
I personally, I'm in deep disagreement with many of my colleagues. I think it's 100% assured that he's going to do it, because if he is guilty of the way in which he's carried on with the Russians, then he has to, because otherwise Mueller's going to call him out on it.
And also, we found out recently that Mueller's looking at Donald Trump's tax returns.
So thank you, Scott. Okay, we've got a Fred in Hurley. Okay, Fred in Hurley, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hey. And gentlemen, sir. I'm concerned on NPR's reporting about the Kushner emails, et cetera. And the way it keeps being reported is that, you know, that this is what it's really about. And it just, for me, and never is the word allegedly used, because we don't know. You know, they may have been using those words, but, you know, that could have been code. And so, but it's never purported to be alleged. You know, we know that those emails exist.
Okay, Fred.
I really hope they've got the goods, you know, because to have us be going through all of this and knowing the state of affairs that all of the people that I know are in their minds right now, you know, something's got to happen. Thanks. Oh,
thank you, Fred. Okay, and very quickly, I mean instantaneously, Kim, you got a second or two to make your point. Go ahead.
Yeah, first, happy birthday. Second,
that's a good point.
WTTG, which is now Fox News in Washington, D.C., back in the 70s, they experimented with having a show called Good News, where they just told good news.
Yeah.
It lasted about a week.
Yep.
Everybody wants to hear good news.
Yeah, we always get that. Why can't you people do the good news? You're absolutely right. As Morgan just pointed out so profoundly, You know, negative. People don't like the negative ads. They don't like them. But they are incredibly successful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And thank you, Kim. Appreciate that very much.
Okay. Happy birthday again.
Thank you again. We're out of time, but I want to thank everyone who called in, and I want to thank Morgan Hook. Morgan, you're great. You really know your stuff. For joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paul. And now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, RhinebeckArt.com, and Ken Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com, the Lake George Association, investing now to help keep Lake George waters clean for future generations. LakeGeorgeAssociation.org/join, and the barn at Egremont Village Inn, presenting the Liza Colby Sound on Friday, July 28th at 8 p.m. and the Metromen on Saturday, July 29th at 8 p.m. TheEgremontBarn.com. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Maura Hammer. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.